This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, 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 Jen. How are you? What's
going on? I'm doing great. How are you? Nothing's going on. We're in the middle of Snowmageddon.
Snowmageddon. Yeah. You know, my friend that I work with, you know, we're teachers, of course. Mm-hmm. And so, Kevin, shout out to you, which you will never hear this. So I could say bad things about you and you'd never. Anyway, he emailed me, or texted me rather, and he said, look, it's snowing. And then he's like thinking of you because this is my dream. This is it. Like getting mm-hmm. a snow day, having it snow, and getting a snow day. It's the most beautiful thing the entire school year. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Nothing's changed with you since you were six.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. Actually, the kids laugh hard. I get more excited. Like, I jump up and down and I'm like, it's a scene, but I can't help it. I just get excited. It's important to me. It's like a free day off, you know?
I totally get it.
You can like do extra things around the house because you didn't know you had that day off. Or even better yet, you can sit on your bed and play Best Fiends and watch a movie, which is what I'm going to do. Just saying.
Yeah.
In full clothes, because that's the eternal thing that I always do, but whatever.
I know. I told the kids that today they had their choice. They could either chill out and relax today, or tomorrow during their big day off, they could clean. So they chose today as their relaxing day.
Yeah, of course they do. They always do, because I think kids think that the end of the world, hopefully, fingers crossed, are going to happen the next mm-hmm. day, and then they don't have to do it.
Or that I'm going to just forget.
Yeah, there's never, ever a time in life that a kid goes, you know what? Gosh, Mom, let me get up today and clean the house. I'd rather have tomorrow off. Yeah,
at least none of the kids I know anyway. Yeah,
exactly. All right, Jen, we're about ready to hit day 11 on our
Woo-hoo.
12 nightmares before Christmas.
That means it's Christmas Eve Eve.
Well, wait, Christmas?
Yes,
because
Christmas
we end
Eve,
on the
Eve.
20. Yeah, well, yeah, 23rd is Christmas Eve Eve. All right, Jen, you ready to go?
All right, I'm ready. Hit it. Suck it to me.
Suck it to me, mama. All right, here we go. On Easter Sunday, families gather to celebrate with family and friends. They enjoy the traditional ham dinner with all the trimmings and attend service to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. That's a time to be together with those you love, or those you don't, if you're me, and cherish. But for James Rupert, it was something much different. As we've learned, often things look different on the outside than on the inside, and sometimes they are not at all what they seem to be.
Mm.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
James Rupert seemed like a normal kid growing up in Hamilton, Ohio, but there was a few signs, as there always are, Jen. How many times
always
am I going to say this, right? The
Rupert's
mm-hmm. home didn't have indoor plumbing or running water. And actually, it was more like a barn than a house, maybe like a structure, I guess. James was a bit of a sickly kid. He suffered from asthma, which a lot of people have. But, you mm-hmm. know, that house they lived in did no favors to that because it was not very insulated. It wasn't very clean. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that made it worse. Due to his asthma, he would have to sit out of a lot of school activities the other kids participated in, and we all know what happens sometimes when that happens. This is where you're supposed to say what happens.
What happens?
No, you're supposed to say, you mean bullying.
You mean bullying? This reminds me of your first script.
I know, that's what I was
everything scripted
thinking.
Out. And I was supposed to.
That
we are dorks, man.
Yeah. And people think that, like, we do this on purpose, and we don't.
I know.
And
cold, emotionalist.
Oh, Lord. Whatever.
Annoying dorks. That's what
I think
we
I'd
are.
Rather be cold and emotionless than annoying. Not really, because I know them both. Okay, yeah. Here we go. So Jen, yeah, he would sit out of a lot of activities, sports and things like that at school because he couldn't participate due to the fact that he had asthma. But right. He was also really shy, skinny. He was kind of, I would say petite, but I don't think you say boys are petite. He was a little bit on the shorter
compact.
Stature. Compact. There we go. Mm-hmm. Because he was so skinny, he walked kind of hunched over, much like my son, because he's tall, but still right. Loses 5 inches because he walks over like that.
That happens. A lot of people that are tall do that, so they're not as tall.
All of this came together, and it made him not really fit in with the other kids. He was routinely teased by all of them, his schoolmates and things like that. James ended up kind of becoming pretty much a loner. Even when he could do things, he would avoid doing the extracurricular activities. He didn't go to ball games, he didn't go to dances, and you know what? He never dated girls either. A little bit of a backstory, Jen. James was only 12 years old when his 36-year-old father died from complications from tuberculosis. James was forced to grow up a lot faster and take on more responsibility around the home. James would look back on his dad, and he wouldn't really remember him fondly. In fact, he said that he remembered his dad as a man with a violent temper who showed no affection for James. Now, affection for James, that's the key part in James's mind, right? Mm-hmm. Not his brother. James believed that his father did not hold much faith, put very much faith behind James. He would tell him that he'd never be successful as an adult. He'd never hold a job. He'd never get a girlfriend. You know, just mm-hmm. terrible things a parent would say to a child. The death of his father only made his life with his mother much worse. Charity Rupert, James's mother, told him that she never wanted him and that she'd actually wanted a baby girl, not another boy. The mother didn't bother to hide her preference for Leonard, the older brother. James had said that his brother was always mean to him when they were younger and actually would beat him up with a hose and tie him up and, well, you know, act like a bully older brother that they sometimes are.
Right.
Rupert would later tell psychiatrist that after his dad died, his mother would beat him and taunt him and would encourage his brother Leonard to do the same.
Ew.
At age 16, things at home got so bad that Rupert ran away. And then after coming home, he later attempted suicide by trying to hang himself with a sheet.
Ew.
Though he failed in this attempt, the thought of suicide was something that stayed with him for decades to come.
Ew, and how old was he when he did this?
Young, 16.
Oh.
His brother was all things that James was not. Leonard was popular and played sports. Leonard was 5 inches taller than James, which always bothered James because he was a pretty petite kid, a pretty little guy. School teachers would always compare James to Leonard as Leonard excelled in school, and James did not. Leonard had all the things that James always felt that he lacked. Leonard graduated from night school with a degree in electrical engineering, whereas James flunked out of college after 2 years. Leonard became a successful engineer with General Electric, whereas brother James went from job to job. Leonard was happily married with 8 children, whereas James was never married. And in fact, he was jilted by his only fiance, the only girl he ever dated, and he continued to live with his mother. But more importantly to that, James had dated all these women whom his brother liked, but his brother would actually later marry and one of James's former girlfriends.
So wait, James' brother married one of his girlfriends?
Former girlfriends, yeah.
Oh.
So stole him away. James liked to spend a lot of his free time at the library in Hamilton, but that would come to an end in 1965 when police were called in regards to an obscene phone call that was made to one of the workers at the library. James did admit that he made that phone call after the police kind of badgered him and they kind of felt that he did it. But he'd also tell police that he was convinced his mother and brother were attempting to discredit him by informing everyone of his transgression and reporting to the FBI that he was a communist and a homosexual.
Oh good.
And well, you know, here comes the paranoia.
Because the FBI really wanted to know that he was a homosexual. That was really on their top.
And a communist.
Yeah.
He believed that the FBI was tapping his telephone, not only at home, but also any place that he'd visit. And, you know, that would be a restaurant, a bar. It didn't matter. He believed that they were trailing him and then actually tapping any phone of any place he visit, extremely paranoid.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
By 1975, he told psychiatrists of being followed by various police agencies. Now, this was not only the local police in town, but the FBI, the CIA. I mean, these high police agencies, I mean, these high police headquarter people, I don't know how to say that, but were following him in Little Hamilton, Ohio.
Oh, yeah. Because he was gay and he was a communist. Or a gay communist, which God forbid that happens.
That's even worse.
I know. Burn him.
Here's where I'm going to bring up James's fascination and passion for what? That's right, guns. James really liked guns, and possibly, I'm guessing that he liked them because they felt like they gave him the power that he lacked as a kid and as a teen.
He's kind of not wrong. No, I mean,
exactly. But yeah. As a smaller adult now, you're kind of like, haha, I have a gun. I get the last word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
James collected guns, and he'd often go out to shoot the guns for fun, which lots of people do. That's fine. But as recently as 2 days before that fateful Easter Sunday, witnesses would later testify that James was out by the river shooting his .357 Magnum, and he was shooting at tin cans, which, you know, that's fine. I mean, that people do
that
all
the time. No, it's normal. That's target practice. You know,
well,
we should know.
Not normal.
Being from a small town, you know, that's what people do, right?
That's very normal. However, what's not normal is that a gun store employee would later claim that James came into a store and asked him where he could obtain a gun silencer.
Oh, good.
So again, there's
everybody
always
needs
signs.
One. Mm-hmm.
There's always signs. I don't even know. I would guess, are silencers even legal?
I don't know. At one point, they were not illegal, but the government that is in charge now kind of wants it to be legal.
Legal?
Mm-hmm.
No. Why do you need a silencer? There's no reason. What? You don't want to scare the deers when you're out shooting a rifle?
Hey, don't look at me. I know. I don't think there's any need for him either.
Hmm. So we know that James may have had, ironically, since we just talked about that last episode, may have had less than an ideal upbringing. We know that James believes he's being watched by the FBI. We know that he loves guns. And, you know, all this stuff together, again, like we said in the episode earlier, doesn't make you a serial killer, as we said earlier. In this episode, I say it doesn't usually lead a man to do what James Rupert did on Easter Sunday in 1975.
Okay, real quick. Under federal law, it has never been illegal to own a silencer. If it is legal for you to buy a handgun and you live in a state that allows ownership, then it's probably legal for you to own a silencer. And there are 52 states that allow private ownership of
which two don't
silencers. No, which 42 states allow it, so that means 8 states don't. No.
42. I got you.
Well, yeah, 42.
Good thing I know math.
You do know math. You amaze me by your math.
Charity Rupert was going to host that fateful Easter family dinner. Now, since James lived with her, she only needed to invite Leonard, his wife Alma, and their 8 children. That's right, 8 babies. Like all children on Easter morning, the highlight is, of course, the egg hunt and the visit with the bunny. So shortly after arriving, Leonard's 8 kids, ranging in age from 4 to 17 years old, were out in the front yard busy hunting Easter eggs. Whoop, whoop. That was so fun. Soon they all were called inside. They were getting ready to eat. So they all came into the house, you know, and they're going to have this great big, beautiful Sunday Easter dinner. I'm sure the mom was pretty excited about having all these people over. So everybody's getting ready. They're just kind of hanging out all in the house, except for James. Now, James, who had just turned 41 years old the Saturday, like 24 hours before, the day before. He was actually on the second floor of the house, and he was up there taking a nap / making final preparation, right?
Oh, mm-hmm.
James spent the afternoon asleep in an upstairs bedroom. At 4 p.m., he woke up and he went downstairs where he made some small talk with the brother, the wife, and the kids, spent a few minutes with them, and then James said that he was going to go upstairs, get his guns, because he was going to go target shooting. He was going to go practice shooting his guns. So he went back upstairs. Charity was prepping the food for the big dinner while Leonard and Alma were at the kitchen table and their children were scattered all around the house. The serenity of the family was about to be shattered. James Rupert walked calmly down the stairs carrying 3 revolvers, a .357 Magnum and twin .22 caliber handguns, and an 18-shot rifle. As he walked through the kitchen, his brother asked him, with, you know, like a snicker, a smile,
right.
How's your Volkswagen, Jimmy? Which I guess is a It's a demeaning comment about his car.
Right.
James leaned against the kitchen sink, apparently to brace himself, to steady himself. James then lifted up the gun and fired his first shot at his brother, Leonard, who fell backward onto the floor. Oh. He then shot Alma, followed by his mother. When it was all over and done, James Rupert had fired 31 shots, stopping only to reload. 10 of the victims were shot point blank in the head, with the final victim shot in the chest. 5 bodies were found in the living room and 6 in the kitchen area. They were not restrained, and it seemed like there wasn't even a struggle. They were just shot one after the other. One of the Rupert children was actually found lying only a foot or so away from the back door. It seemed that she had tried to make a run for it, and she'd even managed to open the door, pry it open, before her Uncle James brutally shot her.
Shot her. That's horrible.
None of the other victims even came close to escaping. They were all shot dead where they were.
Can you imagine the panic they must have felt?
No.
Somebody that they love and trusted, and, I mean, sure, they had little respect for him, but to come down and...
I mean, but their kids... The adults probably might not have, but the kids did, because the kids only know what the parents say. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So James Rupert would call the police that evening at about 9:30. Now, this is the same night. He tells the police what he'd done. When police arrived, James was standing in the doorway waiting for them. As he stood there, police could see lifeless bodies sprawled all on the floor behind him. The officers on scene would state that James said, quote, "My mother drove me crazy by always combing my hair, talked to me like I was a baby, and tried to make me into a homosexual," end quote.
I don't understand why mothers do that.
But you know what? He's paranoid.
No,
he even knows
I know.
If she does
I know.
Do that. But maybe
That's
she
true.
Did. This is from his point of view, right?
Yeah, true. True. You're right.
And he was a sickly kid. He was the one that wasn't popular. He was the one that was bullied. So maybe she did baby him a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's worse things than combing his hair and talking to him like a baby. I mean, the father told him he was a piece of shit that wouldn't amount to anything, so...
That's true, but still, just...
James Rupert was taken into custody, as there wasn't even a question as to who had committed such a violent, unreal act. But what remained to be seen was why. At his June 1975 trial, James Rupert entered a plea of insanity. Defense attorney H.J. Bressler argued that the very act James had committed was itself insane, that James Rupert had been insane for 10 years, and he was incapable of controlling his actions. Several expert witnesses agreed. The trial was a circus, with people arriving early in hopes of getting a seat in the courthouse. If the people that arrived there were unable to get a seat, they would peer through the windows and watch every move in the trial, kind of like, you know, to me, I had the vision of it being like goldfish in the fishbowl, and you have all these eyes and peeking in through all the windows. Experts would take turns taking the stand to testify about what they thought about James Rupert. Prosecutors would claim that the motive was that James planned to kill the whole family and then take the family's net worth of $300,000. Then get himself declared not guilty by reason of insanity. And the whole idea was that he would spend a couple of years in the mental hospital and then be out, and all that money would be his.
Yeah, I don't think that's how that works, though, right?
Under Ohio law, James Rupert could not have inherited his victim's estate if he had been found guilty of murder. If, however, he had been declared innocent by reason of insanity, he could have gotten everything.
Really? Even though he caused the murders, even though he was dubbed insane, that's unreal.
James Rupert could have used the money, having been out of work for a long time. He didn't really have any money of his own. He couldn't even work. There was some talk that he was seriously in debt to his mother and his brother, and he had invested and lost thousands of dollars in the stock market earlier on. And the talk was that his mom was fed up with it and she was about to evict him, because she was sick of him living rent-free in her house. So all of that kind of coming together
triggered
what the prosecutors say happened.
Mm.
Dr. Howard Sokolov would say that James was in a paranoid, psychotic state. This would make James inclined to be excessively suspicious, CIA, FBI, jealous of his brother, and angry at his mother. Prosecution called 29 witnesses and presented 200 exhibits to illustrate that James had carefully plotted and schemed to get all of the family money tied up in life insurance, real estate, savings accounts, and other investments owned by his mother and brother. Doctors testified that James thought his brother had been trying for several months to sabotage his Volkswagen. Like he would find sort of the, somebody got in my car and replaced the dashboard and put it all back perfectly the same. Stephen Wright would say somebody broke into my apartment and they stole everything and then they replaced everything like with the same exact thing. Replica.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. James was convinced that Leonard had gotten into the car and had done several things to it, such as put holes in the muffler. And it also said a bunch of stuff that I don't understand. And I asked my students what they were and they tried to explain it to me because it was like automobile talk. And I don't understand that. So I just went with holes in the muffler because I know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
James believed that Leonard was mocking him about the car. And that afternoon, when he asked that question to James about his Volkswagen, how is it that that was the culminating trigger that caused James to go off the deep end?
You think that that's the reason why he decided to shoot up the entire family? Because of the car?
That's what they're saying. Yeah. That pushed him over. No, that just helped. Like, he was mad, and that just pushed him. I mean, that's what prosecutors say.
Yeah.
Defense psychiatrist testified that James was absolutely obsessed with the idea that everyone was out to get him and ruin him and his reputation. Now, these people were not only
in
the
family. Did he have a reputation?
Thank you. These people were not only in the family, like his mother and brother, but like I mentioned earlier, it was the FBI, the CIA, the local police, the state police. I mean, all these people, right?
Right.
Which we all know would care less about some guy named James Rupert in Hamilton, Ohio.
Right. Exactly.
They called up a Harvard psychiatrist named Dr. Lester Grinspoon. He testified that James's deadly reaction may have been uncontrollable. And that's kind of what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, quote, his ego was just completely overwhelmed by this rage, the suppressed rage, which had been accumulating since childhood. There was no way in which he could avoid doing this act. In fact, if there had been more people in the house, they might have been killed too. And I agree with that. I think it just happened. He was kind of waiting. The idea was that he had planned this for a long time, and this was just the perfect opportunity to take them all out at one time.
But didn't he basically, he came down with all the guns, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
He said he was going to go before. I mean, he said that he was going to go target practice shooting, so I'm guessing so that when he came downstairs with the guns, nobody would think that's weird, because if somebody came downstairs with a bunch of guns and you're not knowing why, it would freak you out. But if they just said, hey, I'm going to go target shooting, you wouldn't bat an eye. You'd be like, oh, okay, there he is going target shooting.
With all of his guns.
The doctors believed in the idea that James had lost touch with reality and he had become a victim of self-delusion who acted from sheer impulse, the perpetrator of a brutal yet purposeless crime, which makes the TV show that I watched yesterday, Ernie and Joe, on HBO. You got to watch it. This is what they deal with. People like this that can go the other way. I love you, Joe.
People that are in crisis.
Mental health.
Okay.
Yes, mental health. Like, they're mentally sick. They have a mental health situation is what they kept calling it.
Okay.
So they could be schizophrenic, but they could also be a drug addict. High on drugs, depressed, just lost their job, whatever, all that stuff. One year following Easter Sunday, 1975, the Rupert home was unlocked as they were going to auction off everything inside, the furniture, appliances, everything. Everything that was in there because, you know, pretty much, I mean, let's be honest, who wants that stuff? But, of course, dozens of people come out because, you know, they're looking for bargains and they want anything that's gory and graphic and gross. Of course, they're going to want, right? Anything that they can say, hey, this is from the Rupert massacre site. People would come in the house and they would make their way all the way through the front door, through the house, backyard, all that stuff up there. One of the people in there said that it was a circus, a sideshow. And the thing that's interesting to note here is that the trial was much like a circus sideshow with everybody showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And that this was, too, that there was moms with their babies. There was housewives, husbands. It was just, I mean, a lot of looky-loos coming in there to see everything,
right? Pretty gross. You know what I mean?
Well, it is. And just, that's the nature of humans. But that's what they do.
There's a lot of people that collect all sorts of souvenirs from serial killers, too, which I don't.
Of course, yeah.
I don't personally get.
So in 1982, he would have a retrial. And in this retrial, a 3-judge panel found James Rupert guilty in the deaths of his first 2 victims, his mother and his brother, mm-hmm. but not guilty by reason of insanity and all the other 9 slayings. And that would be his sister-in-law and all those babies. Now, this decision suggests that James Rupert intentionally killed the first 2 family members, his mom and his sister. And this could be because of revenge or money. But the others were more just because situational. They were there. He had mm-hmm. to kill them. He really had nothing against them. I mean, how can you have something against a 4-year-old baby? But, you know, hey, that's just me because I'm nice like that.
Yeah.
The 3-judge panel decided in favor of the prosecution, and James Rupert was found guilty of murder and sentenced to the Ohio State Penitentiary. Now, on a legal technicality, he was later transferred to a mental hospital, and he was granted yet again a new trial. On July 23rd, 1982, James Rupert was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms in prison after being found guilty of murder in the death of his mother and brother. The inheritance was forfeited.
Oh.
As of December 2019, hello, mm-hmm. like this month, right?
Oh, really? This
month.
Wow.
James Rupert, I'm just saying, he's still incarcerated at the Franklin Medical Center in Columbus, Ohio. And that's a division of the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. In June 1995, at the age of 61, he was granted a hearing before the state parole board, but his release was denied. Thank goodness. He also received another hearing in April 2015 and was again denied. His next hearing for parole is set for April 2025. He will be 91 years old. So I think it's pretty safe to say that either he won't get it or he won't make it that far.
Yeah, that's... I'm going to say the first.
He won't
get I'm sorry, the second. I'm going to say that he's not going to make it that long. Yeah.
Prison life's hard. It's a hard life on those guys. They usually die a lot earlier. It's not like you get the prime medical care that you get in the real world, right?
But you at least get it. Right.
Yeah, you do. And it's free.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Well, free to them, not for us.
Well, wow. No, of course not.
I'm surprised they didn't get the insanity plea. I'm really surprised by that.
Well, he did for the lesser ones. I mean...
Right, but the whole thing is... seems like
it's
he would be...
also like if he thinks he's being chased by the FBI...
Right, that's what I mean.
Didn't anybody think that was weird? I guess you just think that's crazy Uncle James. You know, crazy Uncle James. He's always spouting that kind of stuff,
yeah, but
right?
Wouldn't you think the FBI would have had some kind of, like, little record on him? That if he's telling on himself and sending shit into mm-hmm. the FBI saying mm-hmm. I'm a communist, you yep. would think the FBI might just put, like, a little gold star by the top of his...
You'd think.
But I guess they might get a ton of crap like that every day, right? I would think.
You really don't think that somebody... age 41 is going to go and kill their mom, their brother, their sister-in-law, and 8 babies. So, I mean, generally that doesn't happen. They're usually hospitalized.
No.
But they need help.
A lot of help. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mental help. People need mental help. That's why you need to go watch Ernie and Joe Crisis Cops on HBO. Call me Joe. No, seriously, though, it's interesting that they're trying to make a difference, or they are making a difference with mental health and how it's handled. And there's some good... situations that they talk about and how, like this, if somebody would have called on him, he would have been taken in. I mean, ideally, he would be taken in and given the help he needed. Obviously, he's paranoid, probably schizophrenic. You know, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV, but he's obviously paranoid if he thinks the CIA and the FBI are following him because he's a communist homosexual.
And, you know, a lot of these cases that we've done for this Nightmare Before Christmas, a lot of them could have been stopped if they would have reported their mental health problems or somebody would have reported their mental health problems. A lot of people's life would have been saved.
I guess you think that it's never going to come to this, but it comes to this way more often than people like to think.
Seems to be, yeah.
Sadly. All right. Well, that was day 11.
11. We have one more to go. It's almost kind of sad it's over. Almost kind of sad.
I'm not sad at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not sad at all.
I'm excited for the break,
though. 2-week break. Yep, mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Yep, we'll be back on January 6th or 8th. I forget which. I don't know, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think.
All right, but until then, right?
Yep.
Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.